Thanatos' robe fluttered to the ground beside her. His barrier shattered in the air around him after being broken by Sen's spell.
"Let's try that again," Nathan said. "Everyone!"
His attempt to call attention to Thanatos' clothing was interrupted by a surge of power. Every gem ability and spell was snuffed out in an instant. Face flames vanished, and Nerevia's bolts lost their glow. Even Astra lost her long-distance attacks, her opals sputtering uselessly. Thanatos immediately pressed his advantage. He blinked in front of Astra, his arms wreathed in flames.
"All immortals must accept the inevitable," he boomed, as he consumed the dark elf in fire.
A second later, Astra stepped out from the fire and clocked him in the face. Her opals glowed. Thanatos stumbled backward, cursing loudly. The blow couldn't have been strong, however. He grabbed Astra's arms and threw her into the dirt.
"So weak."
Nathan reached for his magic, only to find it impossibly difficult. To his magical senses, the world appeared to be smothered in magic. He choked in the stuff, and focusing his spells became impossible. Even Mora struggled, as the darkness over her arms appeared to be thinner than usual. She still had access to some of her magic, it seemed, just less. She bit her lip and moved in front of Nathan. Beside him, Kiana stared in shock. She touched her gem. Nathan saw the other champions do the same. He still felt the link to them, but had they lost it? Or were they confused by the loss of their gem abilities? A lance slammed into Thanatos' back, and he roared. Once again, lava spewed all over him, but he quickly consumed them with blue flames. Without his barrier, he was in genuine danger. Thanatos breathed heavily, glaring at Sen. Parts of his robe were badly burned, and he looked hurt. Nathan stared at Sen, who prepared another spell. She was the only person here still capable of using magic. Then he realized what was going on. Everyone else relied on the binding stone or used ascended magic. Only Sen used the natural elements. Thanatos hadn't blocked all magic. He had countered ascended magic. It occurred to Nathan that Sen wasn't the only person still capable of using magic. He stopped trying to use his binding stones and instead drew on his normal magic reserves. Then he stepped past Mora, pointed his sword at Thanatos, and cast one of his favorite wind spells. A scything blast of wind slammed into the messenger. Thanatos laughed in response.
"Is that your best? Without ascended magic, this is all you can muster?"
Thanatos boomed. He flexed his bare muscles. Then the messenger stared at his bare skin as the ribbons of his robe fluttered to the ground.
"Yeah, I think I'm happier with you, Nathan," Mora said, sneering at Thanatos' naked body.
She raised her arms and made a severing motion across his body. A second later, Thanatos collapsed into three pieces. Silence fell over the battlefield. Over the coming seconds, almost everyone collapsed. Kiana wrapped her arms around Nathan and pressed her face into his chest. Her horn scraped against his breastplate, so he gently shifted her head to a more comfortable position.
"Could you or Laura have done that to me?" he asked Mora.
"When we attacked? Totally. I tried it on that old bastard. He had something in his armor that prevented me from cutting him in half, and I triggered some sort of trap that nearly fried me. Nasty stuff."
The succubus grimaced.
"But Laura could have killed you whenever she wanted, it sounds like. She just got too horny. Can't blame her, really."
Nathan raised his head and looked at the red sky above him. So, he had beaten the twins because Laura never took him seriously. He had known that. His entire last-ditch plan had relied on Laura not ripping him apart when he kept her busy.
And he had seen her obliterate a huge slice of the wall and everyone inside it. He didn't like thinking about that, because she had killed a lot of people in the process. But outright seeing the truth hurt. He could win now, he felt. His spatial wards had improved. I'm going to make some better armor when we get back. Start putting wards into it, Nathan said.
Yeah, that's smart. Mora patted him on the back. Think about body modification while you're at it. We can teach you. Laura's better at it than I am. Probably the only thing she's good at.
They stood there for almost a minute. Suddenly, Nathan remembered where they were. Fuck, the demons.
Nathan!
Narime reached him.
Narime, the invasion.
It's gone, she said. When the whole portal shook and I collapsed, they all vanished. Are you all right? I missed a lot of that.
He's great, Mora said.
The fox glared at her. I'm fine, really, Nathan said. He patted Narime on the head. Thanks for dealing with the demons.
I don't think they mattered much. What happened? It felt like the portal was about to collapse?
Narime asked.
It nearly did, Mora said. Crazy asshole tried to fuck up everything. If he'd taken down the whole portal, the boss would have intervened himself.
Nobody wants that.
Nathan stared. Why?
Ask the dumb goat. Mora scratched her head. I only felt the consequences once. These things are the boss's tendrils. He uses them to, like, mess with your world, given he can't enter it. If they go pop, they'll overflow into the world. Stuff goes wrong, and that means your goddess goes nuts. The one time it happened while I was around, the boss just yanked us all out. Blew his fucking top.
Doesn't he want to interfere with the world? Nathan asked, confused.
He can't do it directly. We need to infiltrate, crawl in, and convince dumbasses to ruin everything for us. That's his whole shtick. He convinces the world to destroy itself for him, then eats it. Mr. Inevitable over there would have been a 3-course meal instead of a 3-piece trophy.
Mora gestured to where Thanatos' corpse had been as it had disintegrated. Despite how pressing the rest of the war felt, he needed to know the answer to his next question. Why did he remember everything? Thanatos, that is, Nathan asked.
I don't know that, Mora whined. We never truly die. Kadria says stuff about infinite infinities and crap. I don't get that. All I know is that if I die, I still remember what happened beforehand. It just feels like I get compressed together sometimes. There are times I remember multiple versions of the same world.
Narime's tails lowered as she tried to make sense of the conversation she listened to. Nathan waved her to put up with this, but he suspected he had some explaining to do later.
So Thanatos might not have been the same one, but a version that inherited the memories?
Nathan asked.
Stop asking difficult questions. Don't you have things to do? Once you finish up here, I can help you conquer the world or something. That's what we're here for, right? You want to rule over everything, and we're going to help you pull it off?
Mora stared at him.
I'll get back to you on that.
Spoil sport.
Nathan walked away from the succubus and toward one of the walkways. Narime joined him, and so did Seraph. For some reason, Astra stood at the edge, staring at the bottom clearing with an expression of confusion.
Is something wrong? He asked Astra.
They're gone, she said.
He almost asked who, but one look confirmed who she was talking about. Almost all of the Dark Elf defenders had vanished. Most of the towers remained occupied, but the defenders at the far entrance had left. Nathan didn't see any champions or elite spellblades. He looked again, certain his eyes were playing tricks on him.
A pit formed in his stomach. Something was very wrong in the spires. Inside his armor, he felt the warmth of Alice's mirror as it glowed against his chest.
Chapter 40. Nathan withdrew the mirror and activated it. Alice's face appeared. She looked harried, but well.
"Don't scare me like that," she said, relief erupting on her face. "You took so long to answer that I..." She coughed.
"If you're assuming the worst, that's not good," he said. "How's a lake?"
"Holding up. There's... No, we'll talk about that later. I'm fine. Anna's fine. It's you that I'm worried about, Nathan. What happened at the spires? I still can't reach anyone on the wireless. Grandpa says that Counselor Valeria isn't responding to her mirror. Castle Forselberg has been reporting insane ley line readings."
Nathan let out an explosive breath. That had been a lot to take in. At least he had confirmed that whatever Thanatos had done was detectable by his devices. That might be useful in the future.
"We've defeated the messenger. The problem is that the Dark Elf defenders have vanished," Nathan said, staring at Astra.
She stared back at him. Alice didn't respond.
"I think this is a second coup," Nathan said.
Astra leaped over the cliff, her cape fluttering behind her. Nadime shouted after her, while Nathan merely shut his eyes.
"This doesn't seem like a coincidence," Alice said. "But how can our enemies time an attack by a messenger?"
"They can't, but someone else can," Nathan said.
Looking back at Mora, he faced up to reality. Whatever might be going on with Falmir and everyone else, Nathan had ascended to a level of power that his true opponents weren't the mortal rulers of this world. Falmir's king, the Spire's council, Tanius, and everyone else were pawns in a huge game. The players were Omria and this chaotic monster that controlled the messengers. The more Nathan meddled with their plans, the more they fought back against him. The time for secrets had passed. If he hadn't made the deal with Mora and Laura, would Nathan be staring down another apocalypse? If he went back in time to when he stood in Garrick Pass and decided whether to defend the spires or focus on the Civil War, was there an alternate Nathan who didn't come here, or one who came the long way? What happened to them? He realized he didn't want to know, that he didn't need to know. But the thought chilled him nonetheless. He had grazed oblivion for the second time. This time, he had averted it through his own decisions, rather than the generosity of a messenger who felt he might be useful to her.
"I need to go, Alice. Stay safe, at all costs," he said.
He moved to switch the mirror off.
"Wait," she called.
He froze.
"Whatever you do, Nathan, keep the Dark Elf Bastions alive," she said. "Their champions are the only people defending the Haukim Desert. Everyone else has abandoned it to fight in the war. If we lose them, we lose everything."
"Right," he nodded. "Thanks for the reminder, Alice."
She smiled at him.
"Of course. I love you, Nathan. Stay safe, and I'll see you soon."
He blinked, unsure if he had heard her correctly. Then the mirror deactivated, and her face vanished. When he looked up, Nadime stared at him in disbelief.
"Have you really not realized that she wants you?" she asked him, her tails ready to hit him at a moment's notice.
"I knew she was interested in me, but not to that degree," he said defensively. "She hit him anyway."
"First Anna, now Alice. You have a real blind spot for nobility," Nadime said.
Then she narrowed her eyes.
"No, you have a blind spot for anyone you never met in your old world. Is that why you aren't sleeping with Seraph?"
"The spires
can wait a minute. Seraph has waited over a year now. I thought I was loyal, but she's something else, Nathan. Don't take her for granted."
Nadime's voice had an edge to it.
He raised his hands in surrender. I'll talk to her when this is over.
Do a lot more than talk to her, Nadime said.
The knights appeared to be exhausted from the earlier battle. As he didn't know the state of the spires, Nathan was hesitant to send his army out. He needed someone to remain in command.
I'll do it, Seraph offered. If we need to move into the city, my gem ability will be the most useful to support the knights. The rest of you will burn the whole place down.
Sen and Fay looked down, twisting guiltily.
Thank you, Nathan said.
He turned to the twins, who were sitting cross-legged on the ground and eating what looked like noodles. They attracted a lot of attention in the process, and not just because they were messengers.
I need you both to stay here and reinforce the gateway, he ordered them.
Seriously? You realize our...
Mora trailed off as she tapped her head.
Special techniques might be useful dealing with this nonsense, right?
I'm not doing things your way. I'm doing them my way. Stay here and keep the gateway open. We might need it in a hurry, he ordered.
Yeah, sure.
They shrugged at him and returned to their food. As Nathan and his champions left the portal, none of the Dark Elves stopped them or even approached them. The few they saw stared at them from a distance. Astra was long gone, he realized, but he knew where she had gone, the Jorman Spire. Once outside, they found themselves inside a reinforced cavern. This, too, was empty. Nathan knew that the Binding Stone was nearby, but he ignored it. Like Alice had said, the Dark Elf champions were vital to the defense of Domar. The cavern exited onto a huge platform that overlooked the spires. They stood on the side of the Garrick Mountains, north of Forzel Valley. The many sandstone towers that made up the city rose up to the clouds in front of them. Below them was the city sprawl. Nathan saw soldiers openly battling each other down there. Fires raged. Magic flew around.
We need to avoid that, he said.
Nadime, teleport us to the Jorman Spire. Given the distance, it only took her one trip to take the six of them. Nathan, Nadime, Fay, Nerevia, Sen, and Kiana. The moment they appeared in the lobby, Nathan knew something was wrong. Screams and shouts echoed off the walls. Heat washed over his skin. A huge fire roared on one side of the lobby. Nobody tried to put it out. The doors had been blown apart, and their remains littered the room. Outside, hundreds of Dark Elves fought each other.
This is absolute chaos, Nathan said, staring at what was happening.
Nerevia's face was as pale as a ghost. Her limbs shook as she saw open revolt in her homeland. Nathan tugged her arm, and she followed along. A few guards noticed them, but seemed too shocked to do anything. Or perhaps they were terrified of fighting three duo gem champions. Whatever the case, they made a beeline for the elevators. Surprisingly, they still worked. Unfortunately, Nathan lacked the key to go to the council floors. He slammed the lever as high as he could. Then they waited. None of them said anything as they rose. The echo of battle and slaughter entered the open elevator shaft. As they passed each floor, they heard a snippet of the madness taking place there. When they reached the top, they found Astra. She stood in a corridor, surrounded by corpses. As always, she remained pristine, untouched by the blood around her. Her ability to kill from a distance meant no one got close to her. Nathan saw two monogem champions among the dead. The rest looked like soldiers, including several spellblades. None of them were a threat to Astra, but the fact they had attacked her spoke volumes.
Astra, do you know what's happened? He asked her, ignoring the scene of devastation.
Council chamber! Lockdown! She said.
Her eyes bore into Nathan.
Too late!
Nathan suddenly realized what was wrong about meeting Astra on this level. She had a key to the upper levels. If she was here, That meant she couldn't reach those levels using the elevator.
Lockdown? He asked.
Astra didn't answer.
Nerevia did. It's standard procedure if the spires are threatened. Upper levels of the spire are shut out. Elevators won't access them. The council chamber has an extra shield as well, given how important they are. The idea is that they can survive even an attack by champions in there, until help arrives.
Nathan shut his eyes. That pit in his stomach grew larger.
Let's hope that's true, he said, and that the only reason they're in lockdown is to protect the council.
The others stared at him. Astra didn't. Her expression suggested that she suspected the same thing he did. A true coup attempt could strike fast enough to get inside the council chamber. The lockdown might protect the perpetrator, not the council. Or, in fact, the perpetrator might be on the council. Too many things could go wrong right now. They found the stairs to the upper level. These were locked down as well on this level, but Faye made short work of the magical protection, and then Astra ripped the steel doors apart. The next level contained dozens more guards. They ignored them. Nathan urged Astra on. Dark elves chased them higher, flinging spells after them on the stairs. The strange wards of the spires increased in power as they rose.
"Why can't we teleport again?" Sen gasped out as she deflected a spell.
"The wards will interfere. For all we know, they might send us a mile into the air. Then we plummet to our deaths," Narime said.
"That might not be that bad," Sen said.
Nathan rolled his eyes and hoisted her onto his back. Unlike the champions, she didn't have enhancements, so she felt the fatigue of a battle plus running up flight after flight of stairs. The other women glared at Sen in jealousy.
"Don't any of you dare slow down," Nathan warned, recognizing the expression on Faye's face.
When they reached the uppermost floors, the stairwell stopped. There were even more guards here. Astra swept them aside, sending bodies flying everywhere. Then she pointed across the room at a spiral staircase on the far side of a marble hall.
"There, stairs to chamber."
Nathan had only used the lift before. Of course, Astra knew how to navigate the spires normally. They ran forward through the open hall. Suddenly, Kiana stopped. She turned and faced where they had come from.
"Go!" she shouted.
Nathan and the others stopped dead, staring at her. He gestured for them to continue. Time was of the essence. He could deal with his beloved horse girl. Dozens of dark elf soldiers poured into the hall. More surged through the stairwell they had come through. There appeared to be no end of them. Their screams and shouts blended together as they roared toward Nathan and Kiana. Behind him, Faye and the others ascended the staircase.
"Kiana, we need to," Nathan tried to say.
She cut him off by activating her gem ability. Her diamonds flared with light, and a glimmering barrier of silver light bloomed into existence across the hall. Fireballs and crossbow bolts bounced off it. The dark elves slammed into it, flailing against it. Nathan felt the power pouring out of her as she maintained the barrier. Her gem couldn't maintain this for too long.
"Nathan, trust me. I'm your champion. I am your shield. That means I'll protect your heart as well. If it hurts you to kill them, then I'll keep them from you."
She gave him a bright smile.
"I'll hold them back. Go."
He stared at her. For a moment, he wanted to yell at her, tell her how stupid it was to do this. He saw the resolve in her eyes. He remembered her face when she lay in the rubble, unmoving, her diamonds shattered, and her body twisted and ruined.
"No," he snapped.
"Nathan,
Kiana, there is nothing I won't do to keep you safe and with me."
"All of them?" Nathan raised his arm and it glowed with magic. Some of the dark elves realized what was about to happen. They tried to flee. He blew them away with a bone-shattering blast of wind. Most of the traitorous guards survived, but dozens died. More were brutally injured. Limbs pointed the wrong way, and blood oozed out on the marble floor. Kiana's expression turned distraught. Tears welled up in her eyes. He gripped her shoulders.
I lost you once. I can handle doing awful things. If it means I never see you like that again, it doesn't matter. Never try to sacrifice yourself for me. Please.
She nodded, then slammed into him with a rib-crushing hug. After what felt like an eternity, they separated. Her barrier vanished, and they rejoined the others. Their pursuers didn't follow. Despite sending the others ahead, it didn't matter. A steel cocoon surrounded the council chamber. It crackled with unfamiliar wards.
I can't penetrate this, Narime said.
Faye also shook her head. She had likely tried earlier. He saw broken crossbow bolts and daggers on the floor. Nerevia's efforts. The ground looked charred as well. Astra glared at the black steel wall that barred them from going farther.
Let me try, Nathan said.
He drew on his binding stones and cast a high-rank spatial spell. With a swing of his arm, he removed a huge chunk of steel, as though it wasn't there.
That's the twins' technique, isn't it? Narime said.
A poor mimicry, he corrected. Laura vaporized a wall like she was cutting open a cake. I'll need to do this twice more before we can go through. Astra, get out of there. You can't fit.
The dark elf glared at him as she tried to fit through.
I might be able to, Sen offered. My tits won't get in the way.
The other champions gave her looks of pity, other than Kiana, who commiserated. Nathan ignored them and carved the cocoon open. Astra kept herself in check until he was done. The moment afterward, however, she bounded through. He ran after her. An awfully familiar voice echoed off the walls as they ascended the ramp to the central chamber. No guards tried to stop them. There were no champions in here. Bodies had been piled up in a corner. Nathan recognized most of them as the spellblades who protected the council. Nathan and Astra stepped out into the open chamber. A sense of déjà vu struck him. The five counselors sat in their chairs, with soldiers next to them. In the center of the chamber was the traitor responsible. This time, however, Astra swept her arm at the soldiers first. Each of them held blades against the throats of the counselors. Her opals glowed as she killed all five of them with a single swing of her arms.
Nathan! How?
The man in the center shouted in shock. Astra raised her hands to kill him, just as she had her bastion months earlier.
Astra! Stop! Nathan yelled.
She did so, but the look of fury on her face didn't fade. Only her trust in Nathan stayed her hand.
Sareev, what the hell are you doing?
Nathan asked the man standing in the center of the council chamber. Chapter 41. Nathan had been open to several possibilities regarding the traitor in the spires. One of the counselors was an obvious choice. If they started a coup and eliminated the other counselors, they could claim to be on whichever side had popular support. A very savvy political move that suited the Dark Elves. The Bastions also came to mind. They had the power and influence over the military to seize total control. After the failure of the previous attempt, they would have learned enough to know how to succeed this time. Or maybe an agent of Falmir like Gareth, or even Fire, given Nathan's suspicions of her. Nathan wouldn't have even batted an eye if Tanius had been behind it all. But Ambassador Sareev in his ash suit, carrying a small magic stone? He didn't even have a weapon. All he had were honeyed words and the fact that Nathan had overlooked him.
What am I doing? Sareev repeated. I'm taking back the spires for my people. That's what I'm doing.
Kill him! Valeria shouted. He wants to kill us all and take us with him.
Not anymore, the ambassador declared coldly.
He turned back to Nathan and spread his arms out. Nathan didn't respond, his expression stony.
You understand, don't you? Didn't you tell me not to blindly accept the order of things? That if you didn't stand up to those who bully others with their power, that you would never be able to stand up at all, Sarif said.
Nathan's stomach churned. He remembered that conversation back in the elevator when he had first arrived in the spires. At the time, he had thought nothing of it. Nathan had been wrapped up in his own inner turmoil. Surely he couldn't have caused this.
You've been working on this for a long time, Nathan said, avoiding Sarif's questions. What about the cascade? Were you behind it the entire time?
Some of the counselors gasped. They had straightened up by now, but were wounded. Dimitri pressed his hands to his side. Nathan didn't see blood and supposed that the rebels had roughed him up a little.
No, Sarif shook his head. I'm here to stop all this madness. You've seen the web of lies and deceit that the counselors and bastions weave. They're supposed to run my homeland, and instead, they treat us like a bargaining chip in their own plots and games.
Then who? Nathan said. Because you're looking awful suspicious right now.
I don't know.
Really? Nathan could hardly believe the man in front of him.
You're almost certainly right about Fulmir being behind it, Nathan, Sarif said. The Bastions were working with them. So are these traitors.
He gestured to the counselors.
They play all sides, picking and choosing who they support and what beliefs they care about. Heresy is meaningless to them. Do you know how easy it was to turn the Bastions on the Council? On our legend? If they were deserving of respect, things would never have come to this. So it's everyone else's fault that you did this,
Dimitri spat with a laugh.
You told us about the coup that was planned, but you were the one planning it with the Bastions. What, did you tell them that we were going to dismiss them? Take responsibility for your lies, you ass!
I am, Sarif raised the stone in his hand.
Astra's opals glowed. Nathan raised his hand, and she stopped, but her teeth gritted.
Nathan, it was only after you brought up our last resort that I saw the way out, Sarif said, facing him again. A way to reset everything. Remove the distant counselors that lie and mislead us. Get rid of egotistical bastions who think they deserve everything in life because they do a shit job at protecting us. Return my people to a time when we didn't fear an angry champion killing us at random.
That pit in Nathan's stomach opened again as he stared at Sarif's hand.
You have no idea what you're trying to do, Nathan said.
Without these spires, we can start again. Fresh.
Sarif focused magic into the rock, but it did nothing.
It's encrypted, you moron! Kill him before he finds a way around it, Valeria snapped.
Nathan realized what the lockdown was about and why the counselors were still alive. Sarif needed them to blow everyone to pieces.
Do you have any idea how many people will die if you activate that? Nathan said.
These towers don't matter. Millions. The explosion will vaporize the entire city and half the valley.
Nathan's voice echoed in his ears as it bounced off the sandstone walls.
You don't know that, Sarif said coldly. I thought you'd understand. Aren't you doing the same thing in the Empire? You're taming that rebellious princess. Before you came, she only played the role. A tomboy princess that people pretended to smile at, aware that she would one day grow up, marry a decent man, and settle down.
Now she's the perfect image of a future empress. Because of you.
Is that how it appeared to others? Nathan pushed away the thought. Sarive was trying to get under his skin.
Nathan, there's another path, the ambassador continued. Help me. You have the power and the champions. Unlike the pathetic bastions here, you keep your champions in check. Even our legend bows before you. Remove the council, our bastions, and I can work with you and the Empire. I promise you that, Nathan.
How many times had Sarive said Nathan's name? A part of Nathan's mind realized this was a technique to appear more familiar to him. He barely knew Sarive. The ambassador had been affable and friendly, but that was all. This was all a trick. Sarive had manipulated all the levers behind the scenes. Nathan had simply overlooked him. And if it wasn't a trick, it didn't matter. Nathan had a world to save. He couldn't fix the political and social problems of every nation on Domar, and especially not at the cost of leaving one vulnerable to attack by messengers.
How will you stop the invasions? Nathan asked. There can always be more bastions and champions to recruit. They can be kept in check this time. And didn't you save us this time anyway? Sarive scoffed. The spires are a shadow of their former glory.
Nathan sighed. He rubbed the bridge of his nose. No, Sarive, there aren't always more bastions and champions. Trust me on that one. Nathan waved his hand in Astra's direction.
Astra.
Sarive's face twisted in rage. He screamed as his hand was crushed and the magic detonator clattered to the floor. Then, before the ambassador could say another word, Astra hurled him over the edge of the tower. The wind swallowed his scream.
Waste of time, Astra said, staring at Nathan.
No, it wasn't. He looked up at the counselors, who looked back at him with pale faces.
I'm not here to change nations. I only care about preventing Domar from being overrun by a demonic horde. But that nearly happened today.
I can't do your jobs for you, but I'd suggest that you think about why Sarive was here and how to stop it from happening again. We didn't get to be counselors by refusing to look at reality, Valeria said. Thank you, Lord Nathan, for saving the spires. But there's more to be done. Can you please help us?
5 noble dark elves stared down at him, asking for help from a human. A decade ago, Nathan would have found the image amusing. Today, he didn't care.
The Empire is in the grips of civil war, he said. There isn't time to spare helping other nations.
He paused as the council grimaced as one.
But consider this a personal favor. There will always be more demons, and I need you to put your house in order. I'll stay for a day or two to quell the worst of it. You'll need to pick up the pieces.
With those words, Nathan turned around and swept out of the chamber. His other champions stood behind him, watching from the entrance. They stepped aside to let him through. This time, Astra followed him without hesitation. Nathan spent the rest of the day and the next morning in the spires. Sarif and his knights put down some of the largest cells of violence. In preparation for the civil war, they had been training for urban warfare and dominated the Dark Elf soldiers easily. Despite his orders, the twins slipped out and caused havoc at some point. Nathan hoped their appearance was chalked up to rumors and hearsay. His knights were trained to fight demons and did so exceptionally well. Most of the Dark Elves struggled to even graze his knights in return. The Dark Elf bastions surrendered by the end of the first night, along with their champions. Given the situation, Nathan doubted they would face serious repercussions. Sarive was the fall guy in this situation. Literally. By midday of the day after the invasion, Nathan's work was done. The rest needed to be handled by the Dark Elves. Nathan couldn't rebuild a broken home, especially one he didn't plan to live in. Alice had told him that things were fine. He suspected something more was happening, but she simply said to worry about himself. Before returning, Nathan rested in one of the large break rooms in a tower. Narime settled in next to him, her tails curling around him. More than a few women stared at him as they passed. The fox shooed them away with a glare.
"You've been down ever since finding out Suriv was behind this. Did you actually like him?"
Narime asked him. She played with her tea. Most of the supplies were thin and weak. This close to winter, the spires needed to preserve food. Nathan didn't know how bad the situation was due to the coup attempt. He hoped there wouldn't be a need to provide the spires with food, as well as the Empire.
Suriv? No. In fact, I wish I had trusted what my memories told me about him, Nathan said.
And what was that?
That he was a snake.
Ah.
They fell silent.
So, why the long face?
Narime prodded. Lots of reasons. He shrugged at her expression of annoyance.
Suriv is like the Nationalists, a product of his situation. If anything, I sympathized with him, like I did with Tanius. I can't help but feel like this almost ended up being a repeat of what happened in the Federation in my old world. The Tanius I knew would see the Federation burn before he gave in. Suriv was the same.
Narime rubbed his arm, but said nothing.
The other is that I don't think much will change. While Suriv exploited existing tensions, the Council and Bastions need each other. The Bastions have learned that they can't easily take control of the spires, and the Council need the Bastions to protect everyone. I don't want to be the one to step in and tell everyone what to do.
I get the feeling you have a pair of women who want the opposite of you,
Narime said.
And I'm not talking about Anna and Alice.
The twins. I don't really care much about what they want me to do, he said.
You say that, but I guarantee that they're influencing you.
He didn't have an answer to that, so he moved on.
The final problem is fairly obvious. I overlooked Suriv because I was looking for a bigger threat. He was fairly obvious and had his fingers in every pie. Who made the original offer to deal with Tanius? Who invited me to the spires? Who vanished when the first coup started? He also had some clear problems with the current state of things.
Nathan rubbed the bridge of his nose.
And you stopped him before things worsened,
Narime said. What if I didn't?
Nathan, if you consider every possible chance you had to mess things up, you'd never stop worrying.
Except this is different. Domar came closer to destruction than ever before. The messenger, Sariv's coup, and the speed it all happened. Plus, the civil war breaking out early. The fact demonic activities tie into increased chaos is troubling.
Nathan grimaced.
All I can think about is why I made the decisions I did. How close did I come to messing everything up? Years of effort would have been wasted.
But they're not, Narime insisted.
No. For the first time in my life, I'm actually stopping the destruction, rather than trying to put out an unstoppable fire. But I'm terrified that a single mistake will ruin it all.
He gulped.
If there was another way.
Nathan, I think you're going down a dangerous path,
the fox warned. But her arms and tails curled around him despite that.
We'll be with you whatever you decide. But remember, we are here to support you. Although you do need to introduce us to this Kadria you've mentioned.
Her expression sharpened as she brought up the messenger he had finally brought up.
I'll need to work out how to do that, he said. She's different these days. Her insults don't have bite. When she first called me her partner, I thought she was manipulating me in order to calm me down. Now, well, if she's manipulating me, she's better at it than I can handle.
She is a succubus.
A bad one, if you believe the twins, Nathan said. Narime giggled in response. Before the conversation could continue, a dark elf burst into the break room. He chattered wildly in his native tongue, too fast for Nathan to catch. Everybody stared at him. The beastkin looked confused, while the faces of the dark elves lit up in wonder and excitement.
Umria! The dark elves shouted. She's returned! A prophet of Umria has descended in the Empire!
Chapter 42 Sunstorm. A company of armored soldiers walked through the brush outside TARDIS. Their armor had been scrubbed of markings, and they carried no banners. They moved with purpose and kept their eyes peeled on their surroundings. Dozens more units like them converged on the city. Nathan had left Garrick Pass only an hour ago, but his enemies struck fast. Sunstorm sat in the branches of a solitary tree. Farmland surrounded her, although the villagers cowered in their huts. TARDIS lay on top of highly arable land, given the nearby rivers. The city itself sat in the distance, low and squat over the horizon. The sun was out, and Sunstorm's dark uniform and hair caused her to stand out, hence why she was hidden within a tree. The soldiers stood out to her enhanced vision, despite their attempts to move stealthily. 1,000 rebel soldiers couldn't sneak up on a city, after all. There were too many of them to waste time on. She drummed her fingers on the hilts of her pair of short swords, trying to pick her target. Something glittered in the distance, on top of a hill. It had to be over 500 yards away. Sunstorm's onyx glowed. A moment later, the tree exploded into splinters. The force of the blast caused some of the wood to burst into flames, starting small fires in the fields. Everything had been harvested weeks ago, so the flames burned out swiftly. Nothing remained in the ruin. Not a drop of blood coated the fragments of the tree. Sunstorm reappeared 100 feet away, behind one of the houses. Her onyx glowed repeatedly as she teleported across the field while remaining hidden behind various obstacles. Low walls, trees, a shack used to store equipment, a chapel filled with carved wooden idols of Umria. Finally, she crossed the field and arrived at the base of the hill that she had seen glitter earlier. With one final teleport, she appeared on top of a tree.
"I told you that it would be easy," a woman said, a garnet gem in her collarbone. She carried a battle axe, which reminded Sunstorm of an old friend of hers. A cruel smile crossed her lips at the thought of the preserved head in her storage room. Sunstorm had hated Lucia, but she made for a very pretty part of her collection due to those pink highlights in her hair. This champion was far less pretty. Plain, really. A human girl that Sunstorm doubted anyone would look twice at if she didn't have a gem. Two other champions stood nearby, as well as their bastion. Both champions were monogems. One had a sapphire and appeared to be a mage, given her oversized staff and baggy robes. The other held a huge longbow, as big as she was, and had an amethyst. If she wasn't a champion, the bow would be far too large for her. As it was, Sunstorm questioned the viability of a bow that large in real combat. The bastion looked cute, Sunstorm guessed. Genuinely cute, in the way that children were. She questioned if his balls had dropped. Both he and the champions openly wore emblems of the Federation, rather than the imperial uniforms they should wear now. Did they think that this civil war was about taking back their country? Not that it was Sunstorm's worry. Her swords had found their targets. Anna's soldiers could deal with the vermin from earlier. But champions? Dealing with them was Sunstorm's job.
"Are you sure you got her?" the Bastion asked, holding a hand over his eyes as he looked at the destroyed tree.
"She didn't have a chance to react. All those rumors about this Bastion Nathan being some sort of super-bastion blessed by Umria herself are bullshit," the Garnet Champion said, clapping her Bastion on the back. His champion died like a bitch, just like the rest of the Imperial dogs will. I don't, the archer began to say.
A bitch, huh?
Sunstorm shouted. The champions froze, then spun toward her location. Their gems glowed. The archer drew and loosed an arrow at the tree, while the Garnet champion rushed forward to protect her bastion. Sunstorm appeared behind the bastion, her swords drawn.
Missed again!
The champions barely had a chance to scream before Sunstorm severed their bastion's head in a single double cut. His headless body collapsed to the ground. After looking over the head, Sunstorm tossed it at the Garnet champion.
Can't say it fits my preferences. What about yours?
Their gems had gone dull with the death of their bastion. They weren't a threat anymore. But after those threats, Sunstorm didn't feel like letting them go. The Garnet champion caught the head of her bastion. Then she screamed and dropped it as she leaped backward in terror. A moment later, Sunstorm was on top of her.
Your head doesn't suit me either, the assassin murmured.
Then she simply stabbed the Garnet champion in the heart, twisted, and pulled her sword back out. An arrow slammed into her back. Sunstorm winced, then looked down at the blunted arrow on the ground.
You can't hurt me anymore, she said, before looking back at the archer. What do you think? Am I a bitch?
You're a fucking monster, the archer gasped out. Tears streamed down her face as she tried to knock another arrow. Sunstorm walked over to her and kicked her down.
Get away from her!
An all-too-familiar voice shouted. Sunstorm froze. Why was Sen here? Then she looked over and saw the mage champion preparing a third-rank fire spell. Her face was racked with fear, but she continued to cast. Sunstorm's hands tightened around her swords. The mage looked nothing like Sen. In fact, the mage looked more like Sunstorm herself. What the hell had that been?
I'll shoot, the mage warned, her voice wavering.
She still sounded like Sen. It must be coincidence. Sunstorm rolled her eyes.
If your training wasn't terrible, you'd know how useless that spell is. You're from Kurai, aren't you? Like me.
So what? You killed Nick, the mage screamed.
Presumably, Nick was the name of the headless bastion lying on the ground.
What are you going to do about it?
The mage stared at her. Her spell slowly fizzled out.
Go home, Sunstorm said.
Normally, I'd kill all of you after your friend's threats. Consider yourself lucky.
I don't have a home. Neither do you, the mage mumbled.
Sunstorm's lip curled.
I do, but you won't find a home if you give up like that. If you survive the death of Kurai, you can survive losing your shitty underage bastion. What, did you tuck him in every night and sing him a lullaby?
Despite herself, the mage giggled, although it came out more like a hiccup. The archer looked between them in horror.
Leave, Sunstorm said. Whatever revolution you thought you were supporting doesn't exist. Find someone who is worth fighting for.
Then she teleported away. By the time she reached TARDIS, the enemy soldiers had engaged with the defending knights. Sunstorm distracted herself by helping out. The rebel soldiers screamed in terror as she carved a bloody path through them. Within a few short minutes, the remainder surrendered or fled. The knights saluted her, but she waved them off. Instead, she teleported away and headed for the palace. Anna needed to know that rebel bastions had already arrived, and what her enemies thought they were fighting for. The palace itself was locked down by Beastkin knights wearing both Anna's emblem and the altered Beastkin emblem that now stood for supporting Nathan. When Sunstorm arrived, she found the knights cleaning up corpses.
How did they get in here? Sunstorm asked one of the knights.
Probably here all along. This is a trade city. There'll be hundreds of them hiding here,
so we'll just need to keep her grace safe, the knight answered with a shrug. Leave that part to us. Inside, knights patrolled the hallways. Servants still moved around, but they were checked for weapons before entering any rooms. Sunstorm ignored everyone and made a beeline for Anna's study. The reception desk where Fire usually sat was empty. Instead, several knights stood guard outside. They waved Sunstorm in before remembering to salute. Upon entering, she saw more knights around the edges of the room. Anna sat on a sofa, a huge wireless device in front of her on top of a glass and wood coffee table. Sunstorm hung back.
"Things are a disaster out here," the angry voice of an old man said. "This has been planned for months, at least. I've already lost contact with two of the other dukes."
Sunstorm recognized the voice as Duke Ilmarns, one of the original regents from the Federation who had opposed Tanius. Supposedly, he traded heavily in food and had worked closely with Anna and Nathan over the past 2 years, given their food needs for this war. Also, Nathan needed a lot of food to keep Fay happy. She consumed industrial quantities of meat and grains.
"Do we know if any of the other dukes are working with them?"
a calmer voice asked. Duke Tarius, if Sunstorm guessed correctly. Narime's old friend.
"Of course they are, but this has spiraled out of control already. Nobody knows what they're fighting for, unless they're fighting for us," Ilmarn said. "Some of them hate the Beastkin. Some of them hate us. A lot of them hate the Empire."
"But they all hate something," Anna said.
"Oh, yes, that I can understand. They're angry, but that's all that unifies them, and they seem to have gotten very confused. They don't know what nobles they're trying to overthrow, so I think they're just trying to overthrow all of them. I've received messages for help from counts and barons that I'm certain sent their soldiers to try to kill me yesterday."
Ilmarn laughed bitterly.
"What a fucking mess!"
"Things aren't that bad over here," Tarius said. "For now."
"Yes, for now," Anna said. She sighed. "Do we know where George is?"
"For once, he's not betraying us," Tarius said. "He and I control the duchies on the west coast of the Federation. Sorry, of the Amica duchies."
He chuckled at his own mistake.
"He actually has a fleet capable of naval warfare, unlike me. But it's not equipped with the wireless. He's busy making arrangements in case the rebels have ships of their own."
"Can we not call them rebels?" Anna suggested. "It makes them sound noble somehow."
"Insurgents," Ilmarn said. "That's what Tanius always called people who opposed him. Can't say I like borrowing his methods, but he knew how to handle this sort of thing brutally well."
"Emphasis on the brutal?" Anna asked.
"Do you need to ask?"
Ilmarn replied with a cynical laugh. "What about the Halkeem Desert? You're all alone in the west, Ilmarn. I doubt you can reinforce it," Anna said.
"Do not worry about us," a cold feminine voice said over the wireless, surprising Sunstorm. "Although all of your champions have abandoned your posts, we remain vigilant. Humanity may squabble and forget their duties to protect the world, but the Dark Elves shall not."
Nobody replied. Sunstorm could feel Anna and the Dukes collectively roll their eyes, even if she couldn't see them. The condescension from the Dark Elves wore thin, and was particularly frustrating, given Nathan was saving the spires from a messenger right now. Something suddenly occurred to Sunstorm. If the Dark Elves were the only defenders of the Halkeem Desert, didn't that mean...
"Anna,"
Sunstorm said, trying to interrupt. "Not now, Sunstorm," the Duchess replied, waving her off.
"Anna," she repeated. "Talk to Lord Nathan's champion, Anna," Ilmarn said.
Unlike our netter, hers might keep you alive.
Thank you for your extremely positive words, Duke Ilmarn, Anna said dryly. I'll return shortly. Then Anna froze. She stared at the wireless device in confusion. After several long moments, one of the Beastkin knights stepped up and fiddled with the device. The call is on hold, Your Grace, the knight said, clearly suppressing her amusement. Thank you, Anna said. I'll learn to use these things one day.
Not too soon, one of the other knights muttered. Listening to her get flustered over them when she tries to contact Nathan is half of the fun we have. A few nearby knights nodded in agreement. Clearly, entertainment was rare in Anna's palace, but their appreciation for their duchess was plain.
Sunstorm, what's the matter? Anna asked as she strode up to her.
Do you have a way to contact Nathan? Sunstorm asked.
I can probably get through to him if necessary. Don't you have a way? Anna asked. She looked at her bedroom.
No, Sunstorm said. He needs to be reminded that the Dark Elf Bastions can't die under any circumstances. If their champions are the only thing protecting the Haukeen Desert, then it doesn't matter what else happens. We lose if one of those bastions dies.
Anna stared at Sunstorm. Her eyes slowly widened in shock. Then she ran into her bedroom. After several minutes, she returned, but flustered. He should find out soon, Anna said. Did you need anything else?
I wanted to tell you about the champions closing on TARDIS and their motivations, Sunstorm said. But did you need me to help somewhere else?
Anna frowned. I did, actually. Fire fell out of contact not long after heading up to help Vera at Kravum Rock. I'm worried about her.
Someone has to be, Sunstorm said.
Don't be a bitch. She's a little overenthusiastic, but her heart is in the right place, Anna said.
You mean she wants it to be pierced by Nathan's cock, Sunstorm said.
I suspect she wants something else penetrated by him. But yes. Now, go and make yourself useful. Shoo! Anna waved her off. As Sunstorm left, the wireless discussion resumed. She didn't bother listening in. The disappearance of Fire piqued her interest to a far greater extent. Fire was a duo gem champion. Despite her dislike of the horse beastkin, she felt trustworthy to Sunstorm. At least trustworthy in the sense that she wouldn't work against Nathan directly. If Fire was missing, something was very wrong. Hours passed before Sunstorm found any trace of the duo gem champion. Night began to fall. Nathan was apparently remaining behind in the spires to deal with some problem that had occurred there, so he'd be slow to return. With him still missing, Sunstorm focused on Fire, as she was Nathan's only other champion in the field. Word from the soldiers in the field was that Fire had been in the thick of the fighting. She had gone west. Always west, deeper into enemy territory. They also said some stranger things about her. Things about how she glowed, or had wings, or strange religious talk. Sunstorm noticed that everyone wore Nathan's crest now, and not just the Beastkin. Humans did as well, including non-combatants. She saw people sewing wings onto their patches. A chill ran down Sunstorm's spine as she pursued Fire's trail. There were fewer bodies than she expected. Most of the insurgents surrendered or changed sides when they encountered her. With every village that Sunstorm passed through, she felt the strange fervor of the defenders more and more. A golden glow loomed in the distance, outside a town on the border of the duchy. Sunstorm stared at the hundreds of soldiers fighting in the open field. Townspeople stood at the edge of their town, many of them on their knees and praying. No fewer than four champions battled a golden figure with massive golden wings. Two of those champions were duo gems, although they were only garnets. One was a sapphire, and another a diamond. Two bastions cowered behind the diamond champion. Another champion lay dead in the field, her entire body bisected.
The soldiers gave the Battle of Champions wide berth as they brawled. Sunstorm ignored them. Instead, she teleported into the real battle. She appeared next to the Diamond Champion, who wore no markings and was clearly an insurgent. The champion screamed and tried to fend off Sunstorm. Ignoring her, Sunstorm vanished in a puff of darkness and appeared behind the bastions.
No!
The Sapphire Champion screamed. She raised her arm toward Sunstorm, and a glowing square appeared in her hand. An instant later, a blast of light slammed into the assassin. It hurt like hell, but Sunstorm simply grunted and slammed her sword into the face of the closest bastion. He didn't have the time to defend himself, and died. One of the duo gems screamed in response. A moment later, the golden figure vaporized that duo gem champion in an explosion of light. Nothing was left of the corpse, not even ash.
All who oppose the faithful of Omria will be judged, the golden figure shouted.
Her voice echoed deep within Sunstorm's head, as if penetrating her mind directly. But it sounded familiar.
The faithful will defend the goddess's empire, and they will be remembered.
The remaining bastion flung his sword at Sunstorm. She leaped away to dodge it. Then he ran. Behind him, the Diamond Champion collapsed to her knees, staring in horror at the fallen bastion that Sunstorm had killed. Before the bastion made it very far, the golden figure pointed her sword at him. A moment later, he collapsed. Sunstorm barely felt the magic used. It had been so subtle that the only reason she recognized it was long familiarity with Nathan's ascended magic. Nathan couldn't use ascended magic anywhere near as complex or subtle as that. She gulped, then stared at the golden figure. The remaining champions collapsed to the ground, their gems now inert. The townspeople let out shouts and cheers. They praised the goddess en masse and repeated lines of scripture that Sunstorm had been forced to memorize in her youth. The golden figure approached Sunstorm. She had long blonde hair, red eyes, a pair of pointed horse ears, and a silken horse's tail. Two garnet gems sat in her collarbone, but they glowed with a golden light.
Fire? Sunstorm asked.
Cho,
Fire said, smiling gently. Sunstorm froze. Then her expression turned thunderous.
Never call me that again! I don't care who or what you are. Only Nathan and Sen have the right to call me by my true name. Do not insult me.
Fire's smile turned frazzled.
Sorry.
She scratched the back of her head.
It seemed like the right thing to do. I'm still getting used to this prophet thing.
Taking a deep breath, Sunstorm tried to let her anger dissipate. Whatever or whoever stood in front of her, her power was the real deal, and those gems appeared to be Fire's. Also, her red eyes held an almost accusatory look in them. Sunstorm would recognize that jealous gaze anywhere. Fire looked at all of Nathan's lovers that way, as if she would give anything to take their place. Sunstorm genuinely wondered what went on inside this horse girl's head, to be so obsessed with Nathan. Even now that she had this insane power, she still thirsted for him.
Prophet? Sunstorm asked, taking the bait.
Of Omria, the goddess spoke to me, has been speaking to me for some time,
Fire corrected. She gave Sunstorm her familiar smile.
The time is right to drive out the imposters who use faith as a weapon against the true believers. I know you don't believe me, but it doesn't matter. You stand with Nathan. That makes you a true warrior of Omria. You even leaped in to help me without question.
Given Nathan had just revealed he was working with messengers, it seemed a bit rich that simply serving Nathan made Sunstorm a warrior of the goddess. But Sunstorm ignored that part.
I had a hunch it was you, Sunstorm said.
I saw your golden swords back in a lake a couple of years ago.
Fire blinked.
I see. Then I know I can trust you. Tell Nathan that I'll be with him once I've done my duty.
I'm not telling him that, Sunstorm said flatly.
For one thing, if you're really a prophet, he's not going to believe me. For a second thing, tell him yourself. He accepted you as his champion. Remember that, and what it means when it comes to loyalty. He trusted you, and you should return that trust.
The horse girl's eyes closed. Her body shook for a second. When she reopened her eyes, her jealousy had magnified intensely.
I wish I could act as freely around him as you do, Fire said with a pout. But I need to do this first. He'll forgive me after all this is done, right? That's what he does, isn't it? Forgive people?
Sunstorm glared at Fire silently. Once she realized that no answer was forthcoming, Fire left. The townspeople and soldiers flocked to her. They held their hands against her glowing golden wings. Many waved figures of Omria in the air, or asked her to bless them. Instead, Fire gave them a speech on the need to ensure peace and stability, and to fend off the insurgents. She even slipped in how important Nathan was. Sunstorm sat down on a nearby rock and stared up at the night sky for what felt like an hour. Today had been a long day. She doubted that Nathan would like this piece of news whenever he got back from the spires. Chapter 43.
Does someone want to tell me who this prophet is supposed to be? Nathan asked the day after he returned, to an assembled room of his closest champions and Anna. And where the hell is Fire?
They all looked at each other, then back at him. Nathan clenched his fists, then took a deep breath and calmed down. After returning through the gateway, he had shut it down, then summoned everyone to Anna's palace in Tardis. Due to a literal miracle, the worst of the violence in the Civil War had settled down. Said miracle being the appearance of a prophet of Omria, preaching the word of the goddess as she drove back the nationalist insurgents. His primary champions joined him here, along with Anna, Vera, and even the twins. Suspicious looks were thrown at the succubi, but they had thrown a huge tantrum when Nathan tried to send them away. His connection to them allowed them to wander around freely, apparently. Although Mora mentioned that they needed to be careful with their full strength outside the portals.
Fire is the prophet, Sunstorm declared. Bullshit, Nathan said. I saw her, Nathan. While she didn't look like a lot of the statues, that's mostly because she's a horse beastkin.
Sunstorm mimicked two beast ears using her hands.
What she did have were glowing golden wings, a huge golden sword that incinerated a champion whole, and invulnerability. She fought five champions at once and was unscathed afterward.
Yes, but she's Fire. Nathan rubbed the bridge of his nose. Or maybe she's not anymore.
No, she's definitely still Fire. I caught her briefly. Same smile, same odd look in her eyes. Same creepy fixation on you, and suppressed jealousy that I'm sleeping with you and she's not, Sunstorm said.
Several other champions nodded sympathetically.
Then she's not the prophet of the goddess. I felt her mind earlier. There's something wrong with it, but she's as likely to be related to the goddess as I am, Nathan said.
About that, Anna said. He looked at her, confused. Nathan, Fire is your champion. She spent the last 2 years declaring how amazing and great you are, and a lot of that has been in a religious context. I don't know if she's said as much, but if she's the prophet, what does that make her bastion, who she won't shut up about? Anna explained.
Oh, no. Nathan blinked. Wait, he said, holding up a finger.
That doesn't make any sense.
Of course not, Mora drawled, arms folded behind her head. Because your glowing golden goddess isn't here. Why is everybody so impressed by some glowing wings? We just fought a dude who thinks he's the god of death.
I'm pretty sure he called himself the Apostle of Doom, Nathan corrected.
He stole the name of a god of death from my world. That's what all the bones are about, and all the black. I'd call it a phase, but he's been going through it for all eternity by this stage, Mora said.
As always when these topics came up, everyone else looked confused.
Where's the little goat anyway? She should have an opinion on this.
Missing. Given what she said, I think this is the chance she's been waiting for, he said.
Both twins stared at him.
He didn't need them to say anything to know they found Kadria's absence suspicious.
Look, I don't think this has anything to do with the goddess, Nathan said. I didn't feel a connection like that. By contrast, I felt something in Astra's mind. If that was the goddess, then I think we're dealing with something else in Fire's case.
Especially given Fire was helping him. Although the implication troubled him. A beast can profit of Omria, fighting back against the nationalists of the Empire? That had the potential to upend all of Domar. Omria had vanished twice in history. The first time, her disappearance had heralded the ruin of the fairies, ending their reign over the world. Creations such as the spires and cairns had never been reproduced. The second time had only been over 4 centuries ago, when she abandoned the Empire. The gap this time was smaller, if it were true. But the pattern remained the same. Omria might be hopping between races. But why? Nathan finally noticed that Astra had stiffened in response to his mention of her mind. He stared at her.
That's not her, is it? He asked Astra.
No, she said.
Oh, yeah. I've always wondered why you're immortal. Like, you went super weird when Jiru flooded the portal with demonic energy, Mora said.
Jiru?
Who? Nathan asked.
Thanatos, Mora shuddered. I hate calling him that.
Nathan suspected that Mora was making fun of Thanatos in a way that he fundamentally didn't understand.
A voice, Astra said, staring at the ground. I was weak. It made me strong. I thought...
She trailed off. The twins stared at her with unusually sympathetic expressions.
You thought everything would get better after he helped you, Laura said.
Astra nodded.
Mora let out a low whistle.
Well, that explains why your immortality is so fucked up. Our boss hooked a tendril in you. He loves building women up and then knocking them down. I wonder if there's a messenger version of you out there.
The room erupted into chaos. Nathan shouted everyone down. Sitting perfectly still, Astra held a hand against her opals. Her face hadn't shifted. Had she always known?
Nobody is to speak of this outside this room, Nathan said.
You don't need to tell us that, Seraph said. But I would like to know who this boss is.
A being of chaos that can't exist in reality, but likes to mess with it anyway, Mora said. He eats worlds. The goat knows more about him. Apparently, he has lots of stories about him in our world.
Seraph stared at the twins.
Why don't you say his name?
Because names hold power. We're powerful enough that saying the wrong names can summon the being, or allow them to summon us. When we meet our boss, we try not to even think his name. He's that bad. His tendrils crawl into your mind.
Mora shuddered.
But we're fine, Seraph confirmed.
I mean, you are. Nathan can't anymore. We sucked his cock too much and made him too strong.
Everyone stared at Nathan, and more than a few glares were sent his way.
"She's joking," he said, "about the last part. But she's right that I'm careful about the names I say. It's why I only call her the goddess."
"I'd wondered," Narime said.
The meeting broke up shortly afterward. Too many things to do for everyone. The champions needed to respond to the many requests for help. Anna needed to command her duchy. The twins had to nap. But Nathan took in the current situation. Seraph stood with him in his office as they both looked at the map.
"As much as you might hate to hear this, fire turned the tide," Seraph told him. "All of those beastkins she recruited into her movement rose to the defense of the Empire. The emblem they wore made for a strong rallying cry. Lots of others joined in as well, as it's associated with you, Alice, and Anna. She's been working toward this for years."
"I realize," he said. "I underestimated her. Do we know where she is now?"
"Heading toward Aleik. After she put out the fires in Amica, she vanished. Then she reappeared up north, between Tarban's and Leopold's territory. Word is that she's heading south."
"This is going to turn into a huge battle over the capital," Nathan mused. "Tarban is heading there and will get there first, but Fire and the Archdukes are also heading there. Then there's us."
"Isn't this whole war over the throne? Whoever controls it controls the Empire."
Seraph tapped the Leik on the map before brushing her fingers to the west.
"Falmir's armies haven't moved. I think we were right about the timing."
"And Trafome?"
"They've contacted Anna. We'll need to hear them out. But their armies have massed on the northern border, near the Pearlescent Canyon."
Nathan frowned. "Anna." Then it hit him. "They want to know more about fire."
"Most likely. They are the Order of Trafome, and even more religious than the Empire. You're going to need to handle that eventually."
Seraph looked him in the eye.
"The twins are happy to play along with you, but they stick out like a sore thumb. If you think they can truly be tamed, I'll trust you. But don't forget what they are."
"Given the way they look, I won't forget any time soon." They both laughed.
When Seraph moved to continue the planning session, Nathan stopped her.
"Tell me, is this all you want?" he asked her.
She stared at him.
"What do you think I want?"
"I try not to guess the whims of my women. It tends to go badly."
"You could stand to guess more often," she replied dryly.
She ran a hand through her hair and looked away.
"Nathan, can you call me Leah, in private?"
"Of course, Leah."
Seraph's breath hitched. She closed her eyes and placed a hand over her chest.
"I thought I wouldn't recognize my name after so long," she said. "I don't even remember the last time somebody called me it. But I trust you with it, Nathan."
She gulped and looked him in the eyes.
"Again?"
"Leah."
Seraph wrapped her arms around him and pulled him into a deep kiss. Her legs snaked him, rubbing against his calf.
"Whatever happens, know that I will never regret this," she said. "Never."
The planning session continued, but the atmosphere felt different. His loyal champion wrapped herself around him as she helped him plan their response. Nathan knew he had a mountain of work in front of him. Enemies pressed against him from every direction. Falmir's schemes threatened to undo everything he had done. He still had no clue what was up with fire. Despite that, he looked forward. Everything that had been thrown at him had failed. Once he crushed the rebellion and united the Empire, Domar would have a military power capable of holding its portals. The light was brightest at the end of a tunnel. Nathan could see that light. He only needed to reach it. This is the end of Heretic Spellblade 3, a Podium Audio production. If you enjoyed this audiobook, we would love for you to rate and review it. For more Heavenly Harems and Dastardly Demons, check us out at PodiumAudio.com and sign up for our newsletter. We promise we won't spam you. Also, consider joining our community of listeners, fans, and trolls on social media. We're active on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and Reddit. We'd love to connect. You have been listening to Heretic Spellblade 3, Book 3 of Heretic Spellblade, produced by Troy Odie, written by K.D. Robertson, performed by Stephanie Savannah, a member of SAG-AFTRA. Text copyright 2021 by K.D. Robertson. Production copyright 2021 by Podium Audio. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.